If the richest person in the world can go around buying votes in order to buy control of courts the way he seems to have bought control of the White House, then we have lost any semblance of the rule of law in the United States of America, and our democracy has been smashed to pieces, or I should say, cut with Elon Musk's chainsaw.
Yes, it has. But we're working on getting it back.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am... From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, and 99.5 in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, up in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe for you every day for your listening convenience on the internet. So on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and yes, most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have got a lot of news to get to, since a lot has happened, once again, in the world and in the nation since we last spoke on the Bradcast late last week. Then to a former congressman and platoon leader, a combat vet, Max Rose, who had a few thoughts on both the Trump administration's attacks on veterans, including the plan to fire some 80,000 workers from the VA, many of them veterans, and the extraordinary Signalgate controversy, where Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth shared U.S. attack plans in Yemen over an unsecured signal app chat, including with a journalist that, though invited into the chat, no one seems to have noticed was actually there. Congressman Rose said that any rank and file military officer who had done what Pete Hegseth did would be instantly fired. But to date, Trump has not fired anyone involved in that fiasco. Though they have attacked the journalist, they seem to enjoy that. If you missed that Bradcast, you can, as with all of our shows, download them anytime for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who support our efforts to stay on the public airwaves with your donations. Maybe we will have time to open up the phones to your thoughts on that, since, as I said, a lot has gone on since we last spoke, so we will see. But if you're in our live Southern California listening area today, or listening anywhere around the world via kpfk.org, and you would like to try and get in with some thoughts today on the Signalgate debacle and who, if anyone, you think Donald Trump should fire at this point. Or if nobody, why nobody? Give me a call, 818-985-5735, or for that matter, on anything else that I'll be covering on the way there that is on your mind today. 818-985-KPFK. You'll have to remain on hold for a bit because I got a lot to get to, but you can listen to the show over the phone while you're holding. Please don't wait until the very end of the show to call in, when by then I will not have the time to take your call.
Yes, that's one thing that we can all agree on. Please don't wait till the end of the show.
Yes, please don't. Although, try that other mic, Des. Is that working?
Okay, how about
there
this one?
There you go. That's the money. Okay, glad you got it. Stand by, Des, because I'm going to go to you in a moment anyway. As noted, a lot to get to today. Most of it domestic, though some of it is both foreign and domestic. Sort of. A 7.7 magnitude earthquake slammed Myanmar and parts of Thailand over the weekend. Thousands now appear to have been killed, perhaps as many as 10,000. And unlike similar disasters in the recent past, apparently, American aid workers are reportedly nowhere to be found after the Trump administration has dismantled those agencies and organizations that would otherwise normally have responded to such an international disaster. Desi Doyen, I know you have been following this horrific scene in Myanmar. What do we have for us today? What's the latest on that?
Well, first of all, just to be specific, the epicenter was near the city of Mandalay in Myanmar. It was a shallow quake which caused dozens of buildings to collapse. And because it was at a shallow depth of a little over 6 miles, that amplified the ground level impact. Myanmar's state media is reporting that at least 2,000 people have died. Thousands more are injured and missing. Many thousands more. The U.S. Geological Survey warned the death toll is likely to rise even further. A state of emergency has been declared in Myanmar by authorities, naturally. The BBC reports that Myanmar's ruling military junta has continued to bomb pro-democracy rebel groups in parts of the war-torn country,
Really? Even
after the earthquake.
Really?
Yeah, there was a civil war after a military coup in 2021. Let's see. So the U.S. Geological Survey also reported that a big aftershock followed immediately after the quake. 12 minutes later, a 6.4 to 7 magnitude, it's not clear to me right now, aftershock
Yikes.
Struck the city, and those tremors were felt as far away as Laos, Bangladesh, and China. Let's see. Data from the United Nations indicates that more than 10,000 buildings had collapsed or suffered severe damage in and around the city of Mandalay. And, of course, the damage extends across several countries. In Thailand, the capital city of Bangkok, the jolt caused a skyscraper under construction to crumble. That killed at least 17 people, with 78 still missing under the rubble as we go to air. And the New York Times, as you know, reports that China, Russia, and India have all rushed emergency teams and response and supplies to earthquake-ravaged Myanmar. So have Thailand, Malaysia, and Vietnam. China has sent search and rescue teams. They are already on the ground. And China has already pledged $12 million in disaster relief. But the U.S. has not sent anything. Used to be a leader in foreign aid and disaster assistance.
Not so much anymore.
No.
President Trump said on Friday that the U.S. is going to help with the response to that deadly earthquake. But as Desi notes, his administration has gutted foreign assistance through the U.S. Agency for International Development, the USAID, firing thousands of workers, canceling hundreds of contracts for aid to those in need around the world, including in disaster zones like Myanmar today.
Yes, and the New York Times also reports that staffers at what remains of USAID, that foreign aid agency, they had been coordinating U.S. response plans and teams to send to Myanmar when they received layoff notices.
Unbelievable. You know, we spoke a week or two on this show about Nicholas Kristof's just jaw-dropping, heart-wrenching report in the New York Times after he traveled to several countries where USAID had played a critical role for many years in distributing life-saving food to starving children, life-sustaining medical treatments for those suffering with AIDS, tuberculosis, other diseases, and finding that while Elon Musk has been claiming that nobody died to his cutoff of USAID, the truth on the ground is very different. As Kristof found and reported on, specific children and adults who have, in fact, died. Thanks to Trump and Musk and the Doge bros freezing foreign aid to places like South Sudan and South Africa, with hundreds of thousands more expected to perish in the coming months unless that aid is restored. And of course, that was before the earthquake in Myanmar.
I just want to add one more thing. So Michael Schiffer, he was the assistant administrator of USAID for Asia until he had to resign earlier this year. He told the New York Times, quote, being charitable and being seen as charitable serves American foreign policy.
Sure.
If we don't show up and China does show up, that sends a really strong message.
Who are they going to be grateful to in Myanmar when it's China and Russia helping them? And not the U.S. And, you know, after that report from Nicholas Kristof, well, here was Musk on Fox News, naturally, just a few days ago, responding to, you know, widespread, nationwide, actually international protests against him at his electric car company's showrooms, which are sort of serving as a stand-in for Musk himself and for what he is now doing to the world.
I always thought the left, or the, you know, Democrats were supposed to be the party of empathy, the party of caring. Tesla is a peaceful company. We've never done anything harmful. I've never done anything harmful. I've only done productive things. So a deranged... there's some kind of mental illness thing going on here, because this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there is some kind of mental illness thing going on here, Elon. Maybe you ought to have that checked out. The idea that he says, I've never done anything harmful. There are a whole bunch of dead and sick kids in Africa right now. Who may disagree with that, Elon? There was another comment just a few days later, I think, from Elon Musk with a similar idea.
You had Tim Walz, who's a huge jerk, running around on stage with a Tesla stock price, where the stock price had gone in half. And he was overjoyed. What an evil thing to do. What a creep. What a jerk. Like, who derives joy from that?
I don't know, Elon. Who derives joy from cutting off millions of dollars to save sick and dying children around the world? Because apparently you do, and apparently you think that those who have a problem with that have some sort of mental illness because you've never done anything harmful. Who cuts off aid, which is just couch cushions, change in the couch cushions? Who cuts off aid to sick and dying and starving children? Oh, I know who does. The richest man on the entire planet, Elon Musk. Who could replace, by the way, pretty much everything that the U.S. spends. It is just, like I say, it's couch cushion change in the U.S. budget. Elon Musk could replace all of that out of his own pocket. Instead, he's cutting off that aid. He's killing people around the world. Who's evil? Elon Musk. In one of the very few court wins for the Trump administration late last week, in fact, one of the very few so far all year, a federal appeals court okayed the dismantling of the Foreign Aid Agency, which fights poverty and hunger around the world and helps respond to natural disasters like the one in Myanmar, or at least used to. So that amounts to a win, I guess, for this administration and those who support them, I guess. Congratulations. While Trump, Musk, and the Doge bros have accused USAID of wasteful spending, I should note they have failed to show any fraud, any abuse in any such spending, while claiming that spending the agency's tiny percentage of our federal budget on things that Trump and Musk don't like, despite Congress approving of that funding, that is somehow wasteful spending, that they're entitled to simply cut off without receiving approval from Congress. That's both unlawful and, yes, Elon, it is evil. Now, however, an appeals court has allowed them for the moment to gut the agency, though ultimately the fate of that agency, USAID, will not be determined until after more court proceedings and likely the U.S. Supreme Court's intervention. Also very much missing right now in Myanmar and Thailand. After Cyclone Mocha hit Southeast Asia back in 2023, Radio Free Asia's Burmese service sent out more than 70 reports on that disaster in just 10 days via shortwave, satellite TV, and social media. But following Friday's earthquake that killed, so far, at least 2,000 people in Myanmar and neighboring Thailand, the U.S.-backed broadcaster Voice of Asia has been noticeably absent. That after Trump gutted its parent company, Radio Free Asia, or RFA, which receives funding from the U.S. Agency for Global Media, has been forced to furlough most of its staff and sever contracts with stringers, hindering the effort to gather news on the ground, according to an RFA spokesperson. Quote, given the deadly earthquake in Myanmar, when people are relying on RFA's critical updates to learn more, he said, this is very concerning. Indeed, it is. But among the good news from the courts late last week related here, and there was a lot of it, a lot of good news in this case regarding the Trump shutdown of the 80-year-old Voice of America and its sister networks like Radio Free Asia, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, the Middle East Broadcasting Networks. U.S. District Judge Paul Otkin sided with silenced journalists at Voice of America who had sued after the closure. The judge issued a temporary restraining order on Friday meant to block any further efforts to terminate the outlet. It's the latest setback for Trump's push to shut down U.S. government-funded international broadcasters who are mandated by Congress to report without bias on U.S. policies around the globe. The judge blocked the U.S. Agency for Global Media, which runs VOA and the other international news services, from firing more than 1,200 journalists for now, as well as engineers and other staff that have all been sidelined as of 2 weeks ago after Trump ordered the funding to be slashed. Judge Otkin issued a temporary restraining order barring the agency from, quote, any further attempt to terminate, reduce in force, place on leave, or furlough employees or contractors, and from closing any offices or requiring overseas employees to return to the U.S., for now anyway. In other good court news late last week, for those who care about the rule of law and Congress's ability to enact those laws, U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson temporarily blocked the Trump administration from dismantling the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in one of the most significant rulings yet against its efforts to dramatically shrink the federal government. The new preliminary injunction, quote, maintains the agency's existence until this case has been resolved on the merits, wrote Jackson, saying the administration had taken action in, quote, complete disregard, unquote, of Congress's decision to create the financial watchdog agency in the wake of the 2008 economic crisis. The CFPB is the only federal agency, the only one, believe it or not, focused on consumer rights and has successfully clawed back tens of billions of dollars for American consumers who have filed fraud complaints, deceptive practice complaints against big banks, insurance outfits, sleazy payday lenders. Of course, it was one of the very first agencies that the Trump administration targeted to shut it down in favor of, in fact, their friends at the big banks, the insurance outfits, and those sleazy payday lenders. The judge issued a blistering opinion and ordered the Trump administration to resume the work of the CFPB and to rehire its workers. She wrote, quote, absent an injunction freezing the status quo, preserving the agency's data, its operational capacity, and its workforce, there is a substantial risk that the defendants in this matter will complete the destruction of the agency completely in violation of law well before the court can even rule on the merits, and it will be impossible to rebuild, the judge said. She said the court, quote, can and must act now to save the agency from being shuttered. In her ruling, Judge Jackson also took the administration defendants, that would be acting CFPB Director Russell Vogt and the CFPB itself, took them to the woodshed for not being forthcoming with the courts, writing, quote, the court is left with little confidence that the defense can be trusted to tell the truth about anything, said the judge.
Wow. You don't ever want to hear that from a judge.
Well,
you can't be trusted.
They're hearing it from a lot of judges. U.S. District Court Judge Brian Murphy temporarily blocked the Trump administration on Friday from deporting migrants to countries other than their home country without providing prior notice and an opportunity to seek protection from persecution or torture. In an effort to ramp up deportations, the Trump administration has leaned on regional partners led by strongmen like El Salvador to accept and imprison migrants from third countries. Judge Murphy has now at least temporarily prohibited U.S. authorities from sending people with final orders of removal to a different country than the one they came from without a, quote, meaningful opportunity to argue that it would make them unsafe. The Trump Justice Department argues that allowing people to challenge deportation to a third country after they lose immigration cases would interfere with law enforcement. But of course, the administration hasn't even been waiting to lose immigration cases. They have just been shipping off migrants to very hard, dark El Salvadorian prisons without giving them any day in court at all, without any due process, claiming them to be gang members or being here somehow unlawfully, even though we know that some of those folks that they shipped off to a concentration camp-like prisons in El Salvador are neither gang members, nor were they here unlawfully. They're here perfectly lawfully. Doesn't matter. They didn't get a day in court. They got sent off to the concentration camp down in El Salvador. So in this case, Judge Murphy sided with the advocacy groups, including the National Immigration Litigation Alliance. The order remains in effect, however, only temporarily while the case advances in court. But it was yet another, at least temporary, setback for the Trump administration, for the lawless Trump administration, which has, in a related case, now asked the Supreme Court to weigh in on the lower court rulings, barring the administration from sending out any more migrant flights to El Salvador without first notifying the U.S. District Court judge overseeing that separate challenge to what the judge had described as the administration's blatantly unlawful and unconstitutional deportations. In another apparent legal setback for the administration late last week, these, unlike the previous ones mentioned, come from district court judges who were appointed by Republicans. In these cases, these are judges appointed by George W. Bush. Judge John Bates froze parts of Trump's executive order targeting the law firm Jenner and Block, one of two firms that were linked to Robert Mueller's investigation that Trump has blatantly and unconstitutionally sought to punish for having done so. Punish the entire law firm. Two federal judges in D.C. late on Friday blocked key provisions of Trump's executive orders targeting major U.S. law firms. The decisions came after Wilmer Hale and Jenner and Block rushed to the courts seeking temporary restraining orders to forestall some of the most egregious aspects of the executive orders that specifically targeted each firm by name. That, after two other major law firms, pathetically, one named Paul Weiss and another named Skadden Arps, tried to cut a deal with Trump instead of facing such an order to give Donald Trump millions of dollars in free pro bono representations to causes that he likes. That in exchange for them not being targeted by Trump. Instead, those law firms are likely to be targeted by the public and by clients who say, you know what, I don't think I want to work with you guys. Can't trust you. Judge Bates similarly ruled in favor of Jenner and Block during a hearing in the case. Bates said from the bench, quote, the legal profession as a whole is watching and wondering if their courtroom activities will cause the government to turn their eyes to them next. Just the judge in the other case, Richard Leon, also a Republican appointee in the Wilmer Hale case, said, quote, "The retaliatory nature of the executive order at issue here is clear from its face." Okay. Got any thoughts on any of that? Give us a call, 818-985-KPFK. That's 818-985-5735 if you are in our live Southern California listening area or listening anywhere around the world via kpfk.org. Got some election news here first for you. We spent some time in recent days focusing on several special elections this week that are being watched closely by partisans, given what they may or may not end up telling us about how things are going, largely for Republicans and Donald Trump, particularly two special elections for the U.S. House, both down in Florida on Tuesday this week, where voters are filling seats vacated by Congressman Matt Gaetz and Mike Waltz in Florida's 1st and 6th districts, respectively. Each of them very, very red districts, and thought almost certain to go to the Republican candidates who are vying for those seats. But Republicans are suddenly very, very nervous about those two contests, particularly the one to fill the seat of Mike Waltz, whose name you've heard recently because he's the Trump National Security Advisor. The one who, for reasons unknown, invited journalist Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic into that top-level conference about the bombing of Yemen. And again, if you're listening live today and would like to ring in on that mess and whether Waltz should be fired as the national security advisor to Donald Trump, well, I'm at 818-985-5735. But in both of those Florida U.S. House contests, Democrats are said to have raised more money than the Republicans in those races. And the Democratic candidate in the 6th district, Josh Weil, a public school teacher, is now said to be within striking distance at the very least in recent polling against the Republican candidate down there in that special House election in the district that Trump won just months ago by double digits. So Elon Musk is now flying in to spread some of that centibillionaire cash around to try and prevent reliably red seats in the very narrowly divided U.S. House from becoming blue seats after Tuesday's special election. There's also the very important contest for state Supreme Court in Wisconsin, which I will get to in a moment, where Elon has spent tens of millions trying to buy back the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin for Republicans, just the way he bought the White House last year for Donald Trump. But that's also on Tuesday. But there were already statewide elections over this past weekend in Louisiana that you may not have heard about that may be regarded as a bit of a bellwether for Tuesday's bellwether elections in Florida and Wisconsin and elsewhere. In a stunning rejection of Republican Governor Jeff Landry, Louisiana voters turned down all four of his constitutional amendments, including the governor's signature plan to overhaul the state's tax and budget law. That, according to the Louisiana Illuminator over the weekend. Nearly two-thirds of voters rejected all of the amendments in an election that could have broader political implications for the rest of the of Landry's term, not to mention the implications for Republicans nationwide. The governor, according to the paper, who has sometimes relied on strong-arm tactics to get his agenda through the Louisiana legislature, sound familiar? Could become more vulnerable to pushback after failing to pass his most ambitious policy proposal at the ballot box, and by a huge margin. Landry's priority for the election was Amendment 2 on the four-amendment ballot. It would have lowered the maximum income tax rate that the state could enact and restricted annual state budget increases. The proposal was expected to produce a financial windfall for Landry and the state legislators later this year. Amendment 2 would have moved hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue from state savings accounts into Louisiana's general fund, where Landry and state legislators could have spent it more easily, but voters said no in no uncertain terms. In a statement after the outcome was certain, the governor down in Louisiana attributed the defeat of Amendment 2 to ready for this old playbook. He blamed billionaire George Soros.
Oh, that old trope.
That old trope. The Hungarian-born Holocaust survivor who Republicans have targeted for years because you know how much they hate having billionaires mess around in U.S. elections, right? At least if those billionaires, support causes that Republicans oppose, then it's an outrage. Am I right, Elon? Quote, Soros and far-left liberals poured millions into Louisiana with propaganda and outright lies about Amendment 2, said Governor Landry. So, by the way, just how involved was Soros in killing Governor Landry's Amendment 2 over this past weekend? Well, the Illuminator notes that the most recent tax records available show that Soros's Open Societies Foundations gave $1.25 million in 2023, so 2 years ago, to an affiliate of a nonprofit that put money into the efforts to defeat Amendment 3, and it's not clear whether any of the Soros Foundation's 2023 donation actually was spent in Louisiana on this election at all. But, you know, if you can't beat them, blame George Soros, I guess, even though that playbook would seem to be dead with the world's richest man, Elon Musk, having pretty much bought the entire Republican Party and the White House and the nation along with it. But by the way, there was a billionaire in this race down in Louisiana. Governor Landry, the Republican there, had support for Amendment 2 from billionaire right-winger Charles Koch and his group, Americans for Prosperity, which knocked on doors, ran phone banks, sent out direct mail in favor of the failed proposal. But I guess Landry's not upset about that billionaire trying at least to buy this election. He's mad about the billionaire who didn't buy this election at all, but we can pretend he did because he's George Soros and, I don't know, Jewish something, right? William Most, the attorney who had sued to remove Amendment 2 from the ballot because he said it was convoluted and misleading, said, quote, I think this is a full-throated rejection of attempts to trick Louisiana voters into voting for something that they do not want. Landry and the Republican-dominated legislature might have inadvertently stirred up public opinion to Amendment 2 by also putting on the same ballot Amendment 3, a juvenile justice measure that drew the ire of Democrats and national anti-incarceration groups. Amendment 3, which 66% of voters opposed, would have made it easier to send more minors to adult jails, imprison them for longer periods of time. The Louisiana director of the Vera Institute, which opposed that measure, said the results for Amendment 3 show that voters are starting to reject incarceration as the sole option for criminal justice. She added that high incarceration rates have only served to destabilize communities rather than reduce crime. Looks like voters are beginning to figure that out. Those organizations focused on defeating Amendment 3, but they also became part of the backbone of a, quote, no on all campaign, working to vote down all four of the constitutional amendments that Governor Landry was pushing, and they all failed. The defeat of Amendments 2 and 3 also likely led to the downfall of Amendment 1, which 65% of voters against the proposal voted against the proposal. That would have allowed the formation of specialty courts in Louisiana with jurisdiction outside of current parishes and judicial districts. Amendment 4 also failed with 64% of voters. It would have adjusted the rules for special elections to fill vacant or new judgeships, but they all failed. Everything that the Republicans wanted in this very Republican-leaning state all failed. State voters were a hard no against all four of these proposals. And here's the thing that's probably got Republicans very concerned about Tuesday's elections in Wisconsin and Florida and elsewhere around the country. Turnout was much higher than anticipated for some reason. There were no other statewide issues to decide on the ballot and only a limited number of local races. Projections had called for about 12% of state voters showing up to vote, but numbers from the Secretary of State placed the turnout in Louisiana at almost twice that, 21%.
Wow.
Showed up to vote over the weekend.
Wow. And we have seen in many states where a Republican-controlled state legislature will, or the governor will, schedule these kinds of very, very Republican amendments and rules and stuff for elections where they expect very low voter turnout so they can then get them through more easily. But apparently that ruse did not work this time.
Not this time, at least not in Louisiana. We'll see how well it goes over in Florida and Wisconsin in the days ahead. But, you know, maybe that's why Elon Musk was so desperate over the weekend to blatantly violate election law to try and rerun his 2024 playbook by giving away money in exchange, giving away cash money. In fact, $2 million checks to two different Republican voters for just turning out to vote. Let's take a quick break here. I could use a breather. We'll take some of your calls, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We'll get to that. I got more stuff to talk about, but I would love to hear from you. 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Getting to your calls momentarily at 818-985-5735. This is the time to get in. Use your public airwaves while you still can, while we still have them. 818-985-5735. As noted, election news on Tuesday. Republicans are suddenly very nervous about the contest, the special U.S. House contest down in Florida, after one of the seats, both of them, one was Matt Gaetz's seat, the other was Mike Waltz's seat. They both left after they were nominated by Donald Trump. Matt Gaetz since dropped that nomination because it turned out, allegations of child sex trafficking don't make you all that popular, even in this Republican Party. And Mike Waltz, the guy from Signalgate, who invited in the journalist to join him, and the vice president and the secretary of state and the director of national intelligence, to join Mike Waltz, the national security advisor, and others to discuss classified information about bombing Yemen. Suddenly, Republicans are very concerned about those two seats down in Florida in deep, deep red districts, perhaps flipping to Democrats on Tuesday. We will see if that comes to pass in either of those seats. But they're also very nervous about this election in Wisconsin, where Democrats currently have a 4-3, well, not Democrats, but liberals have a 4-3 advantage on the state's high court. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that is could change depending on how this election to a seat being vacated by one of the liberals on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, depending on how that goes on Tuesday this week. It could flip control of the court back to the hard, hard right that had controlled it for 15 years. And that could mean, all sorts of things, including the rights for unions to collectively bargain for better wages and working conditions. That could go away. The Republicans may be allowed to re-gerrymander the state legislature in Wisconsin again. They could, well, they want to institute a draconian abortion ban from the 1800s. All of that is at stake, as is the U.S. House contingent from Wisconsin in this evenly, very evenly divided purple state, mostly leaning blue these days, but it's very evenly divided state. And yet, Republicans currently hold six Republican U.S. House seats to just two seats held by the Democrats, again, because they have gerrymandered the hell out of the state when Republicans had supermajority control of the state legislature. They hope to keep that. And on Sunday, Elon Musk, the world's richest man, substantially increased his scheme to buy the Wisconsin Supreme Court elections. He had been giving $100 to anyone who signed his petition and another $100 to anyone they referred to sign his petition, supposedly opposing activist judges, even though it's activist judges that Republicans actually love, as long as they're activist in favor of stuff that Republicans like. But over the weekend, Musk promised to give away two different checks for $1 million each to any voter, anyone who had voted in the Tuesday election early and showed up on Sunday night to a talk that he was giving, which is strictly unlawful under state law in Wisconsin. So Elon Musk quickly deleted that tweet and said, no, I'll give $2 million checks away to two people who favor my petition against activist judges. And that's what he did. Now, if you don't believe me that the election on Tuesday is important, just listen to the way that Elon Musk mischaracterized it at that Sunday forum.
It's just how important it is. They think it's, well, it's just, you know, some kind of judicial thing that's not that important. But it actually, what they're doing, what's happening on Tuesday is a vote for which party controls the U.S. House of Representatives. That is why it is so significant. And whichever party controls the House, you know, it to a significant degree controls the country, which then steers the course of Western civilization. So it's like, I feel like this is one of those things that may not seem that it's going to affect the entire destiny of humanity, but I think it will. Yeah.
That was Elon Musk explaining why he was trying to buy the election as the richest man on the planet to try to buy his way politically. And of course, he claims that it's just free speech, nothing unlawful about giving money to voters if they vote his way. It's just free speech. Of course, I wish I had that much free speech, but I'm currently spending it on rent and food and such. So, you know, good luck to me. 818-985-KPFK. What happened? Oh, did we lose John?
Yes, unfortunately,
I was about
we
to
did.
Go to John. All right, John, gift call back if you like. Let me go to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Oh, hanging out.
Hi, Wisconsin. I hope you guys wish you luck tomorrow. You know?
Yep.
And,
yep.
You know, check this out. Musk gave away $1 million, right?
Yep.
And not even a free Big Mac coupon? Come on, you know?
I know.
Yeah, anyways, I just wonder how this greatness is going for them, you know, to make America great again, right?
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
they haven't really laid out a plan, you know, and they got to have some sort of vision. But I imagine some of your callers would, you know, the guys that usually hang up on you, right?
Yeah.
How do these guys call up and give you an answer to that, you know? It's like, what is their vision for all this greatness? And what would it take to make America great? As great as they want it or as they see it, because to me, I'm just baffled by it, you know?
I join you, Rob, and I welcome their calls if they'd like to call in and explain it. Thanks for your call, Rob, 818-985-5735. If you want to call and answer Rob's question on that, what would it take to make America great again? Because apparently right now, America is not in favor of what Donald Trump is doing on anything, even on his signature issue, immigration. He is currently underwater with more Americans, according to a new AP poll out. today opposing his handling of the issue, more Americans against it than in favor of it. Not surprising, since a majority of Americans voted against Donald Trump in the first place, but there were a lot of issues that they supported. Immigration, they wanted him to decrease government spending, they wanted Donald Trump to take down inflation, but he's failing on all of those fronts. On government spending, according to the new poll, 1,200 people from the AP, and by the way, this was taken before, just in the 4 days before Signalgate actually broke last week. On government spending, Trump is 5 points underwater with the American people. On the conflict between Israel and Palestine, he's 10 points underwater. On managing the federal government, 12 points below water. On his Social Security policies, 56% disagree with Donald Trump, putting him 12 points below water there. On Russia's attack on Ukraine, Trump is 14 points underwater. On the economy, again, which most of his voters cited as the reason for voting for him, just 40% of America support what Donald Trump is doing on the economy, putting him 18% below water. On trade negotiations, I should say our trade war at this point, and tariffs, he is a remarkable 60% oppose what he's doing, putting him 22 points below water. Is there anything that America likes about this guy? The answer is no. At least if you care about, you know, statistics and data and what the American people actually think. Those numbers just out, as I said, from more than 1,200 Americans surveyed between March 20 and 24 by the AP. And again, largely before the Signal group chat exploded last Monday. 818-985-KPFK. If you think that's bad, it's even worse for Pete Hegseth. There, more Republican voters think that Pete Hegseth, U.S. Defense Secretary, should resign rather than those think that he should remain in his job. That's Republicans who think Pete Hegseth should resign. He's an Army National Guard veteran, former Fox News TV host. New poll found that 54% of all registered voters think Hegseth should quit, with just 22% thinking he should remain. But among Republicans, a total of 38% agree that Hegseth should quit. Doesn't sound like a majority, but compare that to the just 33% of Republicans who think he should stay. 54% of independents, by the way, think that Pete Hegseth should resign. Do you? 818-985-KPFK. Let's go to, is that John in L.A.? We got John back. Hey, John, welcome to the broadcast.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
So I wanted to make a point about that, which you said, that what Elon Musk is doing, giving two $1 million checks to people in Wisconsin, which you think is unlawful.
Yeah,
you are completely incorrect, man. Completely incorrect. I don't know if you remember, before the election, he tried doing that, and they actually took it to the Supreme Court, and they said that it's lawful. So I don't know where you pulled that out from, but that's like completely incorrect. A bunch of baloney.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for watching your language, John. I'll respond to you there. It did not go to the U.S. Supreme Court before the election. In fact, that was a federal lawsuit that did not go to the Supreme Court. It was denied by an appellate court. It was a challenge to Elon Musk doing that down in Pennsylvania, where the Pennsylvania had claimed that it was running a lottery and that was unlawful. It made its way, I think, into federal court. I don't think it got all the U.S. Supreme Court. And here in Wisconsin, it was challenged under state law. And you're right. So far, the state Supreme Court refused to pick it up. And there's a reason for that, largely having to do with everybody on the Supreme Court would have to recuse themselves because they've all picked a side in this Supreme Court election, the state Supreme Court election in Wisconsin. But no, the matter has not been decided on the merits. I understand it went the way that you think it should go, and I'm glad that you like the idea of George Soros running around the country and spending hundreds of millions of dollars giving it to voters to vote, even though he doesn't do that. But I'm glad to know you're in favor of that now, John. Is that right? Oh, John?
Did we lose?
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. So you're in favor of that, right? You're in favor of billionaires paying people to vote, I guess.
Wait. Are you in favor of billionaires, like, in general?
Billionaires doing what?
In general.
Am I in favor of billionaires in general?
Do you think that there should be billionaires in the United States of America?
I think there should. If there's billionaires, that's fine. I think their taxes should be a hell of a lot higher. Yeah. I have no problem with there being billionaires, John.
If it was illegal, then the U.S. Supreme Court would have stopped it, whether the case would have been taken to the U.S. Supreme Court or not.
That's not how the law or the courts work, John. But it's fun to hear you pretending that you know what you're talking about. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to they would have stopped it whether they anyway. Let me go to Mike in L.A. Hey, Mike, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, I'm glad to hear somebody's enjoying pretending he knows what he's talking about. But since you did ask how I spent my weekends, I spent my last one writing a little note to my congressional representative urging the impeachment of Donald Trump because he had decided to do away with the at least 800-year-old and probably even older than that, thousands of years back to the Roman Empire, practice of habeas corpus, which means that you cannot just detain somebody and ship them off without giving them a chance to at least appear before a magistrate.
Apparently you
and
can
explain
now.
Their case.
Apparently you can now, Mike.
That was last weekend's activity. The coming weekend, I'll be at the one of the scores of indivisible rallies that are scheduled for
Good.
About midday on Saturday.
Good.
And the other thing that I didn't get to write about back then relating to Trump's behavior is that since then it's come out that he has used extortion to intimidate people who might have cases against the government.
Yeah. Against these law firms, threatening these law firms, not just threatening, but saying they no lawyers from these firms may ever enter federal buildings again. I mean, just completely outrageous, unconstitutional stuff from this lawless jerk who has no idea how the Constitution works. Yeah.
But it's not just against lawyers. That's against anybody who might have any case against the government, like somebody that he's trying to throw out of the country.
Yep.
Because they cannot hire the best quality lawyers available.
Yep.
As long as he's extorting them out of the business.
Yep.
So that's one more count for the impeachment charges, I think.
Keep up the good work. Keep up the protesting. Keep up the writing. And as always, Mike, it's delightful to hear from you. So keep giving us
you
a call.
Too.
Thanks, brother. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Hal in Huntington Beach. Do I got him there? Here we go. Hey, Hal, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
How's it going?
Don't ask.
Yeah, I've just been answering how to make America great again.
Yeah.
First off, we could do universal health care.
Mm.
Second, we could raise the cap on Social Security and raise the benefits.
Good.
Third, we could put the 90% tax back on the corporations and the wealthy and get all that going. But the reason I called is I hope Governor Newsom used some of that $2 billion to protect Diablo Canyon, our nuclear plant up there, because they're going to be looking for a Reichstag moment, and we don't want to be on the receiving end of that. I hope New York is ready for that, too, and because it's coming. They're going to use either the Mossad or Xi or one of these other mercenary companies, and you know, we got to be ready. Lord help us.
Lord help us indeed. Thanks for running that chill up my spine, Hal.
Yeah,
good to
well,
hear from you. Thank you, man.
Better prepare for the worst and hope for the best, right?
Good idea.
The plan is sound. Thank you, Hal. Do appreciate that.
All right.
Let me go to Larry real quickly in San Pedro. Hey, Larry. Welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Brad, CBS and their affiliate here in L.A., KNX, have been covering up Trump's criminal record for quite a while now.
How so?
And
how so? How are they covering it up?
The fact that Trump is responsible for a rape, the 34 felony counts, things of that nature, CBS and KNX have been keeping that from the voters here in Los Angeles.
Well, how so? I mean, surely they reported when that happened, when that court case happened, then when the court case was tossed out because Donald Trump hoaxed the nation into becoming president again. Surely they're not keeping that information. You're suggesting they're just not mentioning it as much as you feel they should?
Yeah, I mean, mentioning it once doesn't count. But, Brad, this is important. I think that things possibly might be changing here because over the weekend, I heard the Weekend anchor say that Trump has stepped outside his constitutional authority. I haven't had time to listen today to see if Monday's anchor is following up on that, but I think that's an important point to make.
Well, it is an important point to make, and all of these points are important. And Larry, I got to cut you off here because I'm just coming up against the end of the hour, whether I like it or not. But all of these.
Can I just ask you a quick question?
10 seconds, go.
Okay. Comment on the fact that Witkoff was in Moscow during the breach.
During the breach.
Comment on the Joint Chiefs not being
invited.
In the
you just
and
did.
Comment on Higgs's wife being in on those meetings.
On some
too.
Meetings as well. I don't have time for that, Larry. Unfortunately, we'll hold it for tomorrow's broadcast or beyond, but you just did. Well done, Larry. Thank you, sir. That's why we count on you folks to call in and use your public airwaves before you lose them entirely. Donald Trump went after Voice of America, and Project 2025 vows to go after NPR, PBS, and yes, our friends here at the Pacifica Radio Network. We need everyone in support all day, every day, and thank you for that. My thanks to all the callers, including those I couldn't get to today, to my engineer, Wendell Handy, to my producer, Desi Doyen, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who support our work there. You can drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.